C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Von 23. bis 25. Juni 2023 hat im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung eine Konferenz zur Zukunft des Handels stattgefunden. In dieser Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir darüber. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Planck. Unter dem Titel The Future of Trade in a Polarized World Order haben internationale Expertinnen aus Wissenschaft und Zivilgesellschaft etwa darüber debattiert, wie internationaler Handel in Zukunft aussehen könnte, damit er nachhaltig und fair ist. Die Diskussionen fanden unter dem Aspekt statt, dass sich in den letzten Jahren ein Wandel im globalen Handelsregime vollzogen hat. Weg vom neoliberalen Freihandel hin zu einem eher geopolitischen und sicherheitspolitisch geprägten Ansatz. All das wurde in mehreren Panels diskutiert. Einleitend zur Konferenz sagt ÖFSE-Direktor Werner Ratzer.
The idea for this conference was, things are really changing very rapidly. At the international level, at the European level, we see, you know, the climate catastrophe, I think we have to call it, really, you know, advancing very quickly with very bad results for the, not only the environment, but also for people. We see the, if you want, afterpains of the COVID pandemic. We see the cost of living crisis. We see the war in Ukraine and many other conflicts, by the way. And apparently, to some extent, the political systems react to what's happening. We see now the emergence of industrial policy discussions. We see the emergence of, you might call it protectionism, or at least protectionist policies. So we see a change also in the discourse, I would argue. And the question emerges, what does that mean for progressive civil society and the critical trade movement, both in the European Union, but also at the global level. So that has been the motivation for this conference, to bring together intellectuals, researchers, critical researchers, particularly with, you know, people from the progressive civil society and social movements to discuss, firstly, what's really going on? How can we make sense out of that? I think, you know, there's a lot of interpretation or interpretative work, analytical work needed here. And secondly, of course, we'd like to discuss with all of you, how should we respond to that? Does that kind of entail any kind of changes in terms of the policies that we've been advocating for the last 20 years, 25 years, 30 years? What new elements need to be brought into the debate? Which priorities perhaps should be shifted?
Die Expertinnen sprechen im Zuge der Konferenz von Handelsverträgen und von laufenden Verhandlungen, etwa jenen zu einem EU-Mercosur-Abkommen. Und sie sprechen immer wieder eine Konkurrenzsituation in Bezug auf die Länder des Südens an. Die USA, China und die EU konkurrieren um deren Rohstoffe und landwirtschaftliche Produkte. Gleichzeitig sind die Länder des Südens wichtige Absatzmärkte. Luciana Giotto ist Professorin für internationale politische Ökonomie an der Universität von San Martin in Argentinien und sie merkt im Kontext mit Lateinamerika an.
Regarding Latin America, I think that we have to understand how Latin America as a whole has developed and has entered the global market. And this is like an interesting question. What does Latin America, from Mexico downwards, have to offer the world right now from a capitalist point of view? And this is a very important question. Why? Because what we see is that, of course, we have 500 years of dependency, of colony, of selling raw materials and receiving produced manufactured materials in return. And this trend that we see for 500 years has actually deepened in the past 3 decades.
Auch wenn sich in Lateinamerika politische Kräfteverhältnisse verändern und etwa in Brasilien mit Lula da Silva wieder eine linke Regierung an der Macht ist. Und auch wenn der letzte Gipfel der BRICS-Staaten in Südafrika im August 2023 auf eine stärkere Süd-Süd-Zusammenarbeit hindeutet, dieser Trend ändere sich nicht.
When we see governments changing, what we don't see is actually the trend changing.
Noch immer laufe der Handel mit Lateinamerika wie folgt.
Natural products in exchange for high value-added products like vaccines, like medicines in general, like vessels, helicopters, motors, and stuff like that that we receive, and that what was one of the main critiques in the to the Mercosur EU agreement, right? So Latin America is in a kind of trap right now. And what we find is that Latin America doesn't have what East Asian countries or China have offered the world, which is cheap labor. It's not that we don't have cheap labor, but companies, as Sandra was saying, have mainly fled from Europe and the US, and some from Canada, but mainly US and Europe have fled to Southeast Asia and not to Latin America. So that is a kind of trap. That's why I'm saying, because there has always been a trend in the past. The 20th century has been, we can read the history of Latin America as a search to advance in industrial development that came in a little bit, and then it flew away again with, for example, the dictatorships, right? Pinochet in Chile, 50 years of Pinochet government will be this year.
Luciana Ciottos Fazit für Lateinamerika fällt für die letzten Jahrzehnte ernüchternd aus.
So what we have is the eternal search for development that never comes. There are no governmental policies that simply can take 500 years of dependency away.
Es gäbe zurzeit zwar einige linke Regierungen in Lateinamerika.
But the idea is that it's going to be even more difficult to try to change things radically right now, even though Latin America has been called or has been seen as a laboratory of anti-neoliberal policies. So I think it's going to be a struggle that Lula is there is not a recipe or a solution for itself. He's going to see a lot of pressures from agribusiness. We are seeing that now with Mercosur EU, for example.
Über die Rolle von China in Lateinamerika sagt Luciana Ciotto.
In Latin America, China has been super intelligent. I mean, China, well, the Chinese strategizers and diplomats, right? They have been really intelligent. They have analyzed how the US policy has been in Latin America for the past 60 years, and they have done exactly the opposite to that. For example, they went to Chile 10 years ago, and they said with Chile, we want your copper, we need your copper. The one that you're like the, one of the first providers of copper to the world. But what do you need? Well, we want a joint venture because the Chileans really have a sentiment on copper being national. And so they didn't say, well, you have to privatize as the US, you know, Washington consensus did. It's like, well, we'll do a joint venture. So they were really smart on that. And they went to Costa Rica and did the same. What do you need? Well, we want this. We want a stadium, the Costa Rica people said. And the Chinese built a stadium, a football stadium, for example. A huge one, beautiful one.
So Luciana Ciotto. Werner Ratzer stellt Jürgen Knirsch vor. Er merkt zur EU und deren Trade Policy an.
So he's got a lot of experience, particularly with respect to European Union trade policies. He's been active on many advocacy fronts, covering, you know, all the famous agreements that we've talked about so much in the last 10 to 15 years. So thanks a lot for coming. We're very happy to have you with us.
Werner Ratzer bittet Jürgen Knirsch zunächst um eine Einordnung von den Auswirkungen weltweit bestehender Trends auf EU Trade Policies.
In 2019 we got a new EU Commission in October, and 2 months later we have the so-called EU Green Deal, which was at least for me, or I think for a lot of people, a surprise that the new Commission started a whole package of initiatives for so climate protection, environment, industry policies. It's a package of more than 150 individual measures, and some of them have good goals, if I'm looking from an environmental perspective, like the biodiversity strategy, the strategy for agriculture, the chemical strategy, or the due diligence legislation which is planned, or deforestation-free products. If you are now looking on the trade policy of the European Union, we see everybody says there's a need. We have to do the trade agreements, let's say with EU-Mercosur, because these are our friends, our partners, and we must look for them, for new partners, or we must find every partner who is willing to do trade with us. Even in Germany, there's a change in the green policy. Now saying we have to sign EU-Mercosur, no doubt about it. We need trade relations, and yes, we can fix some environmental problems with some side agreements and so on. But if we don't do it, then China will do it. And China will do it in a more worse case than we. So there's always this China argument. And EU-Mercosur, EU-Chile, these agreements are needed to get resources and also to get export markets. So this is now the situation. There are some discussions about sustainable development chapters in the trade agreements, also enforceable sustainable development chapters. We have already this kind of measures, but they are not enforceable.
Eine weitere Expertin zum Thema Handel und Politik ist Sandra Pulaski von der Boston University. Sie ortet aktuell eine stärker werdende Anti-China-Stimmung in den USA, obwohl im Zusammenhang mit China zunächst eher wirtschaftliche Chancen gesehen worden wären.
But as China approached the technological frontier, as we would think about it in economic terms, as China grew richer, as China became a more important trading partner for others in the world, gradually the wing of the US elite, which has always been there, what we call the hawks or the neoconservatives, the ideological wing which aggressively defends US hegemony, including through military action, has become more and more dominant. And I would say at the moment it is the single most dominant trend. It's not fully consolidated. It's not, I would argue, not yet a consensus in the US to be moving in this direction, which leads to escalation with China. But it's a very, very strong force. And it's a force which leads to intimidation of scholars, for example. Academics who speak in favor of a more restrained approach to China are intimidated, are harassed publicly, in some cases denied opportunities, academic opportunities. Politicians are afraid to not be seen as tough enough on China. And with an election coming up next year in the US, you can only expect this will get worse for the next 16, 18 months. And probably most importantly, in the atmosphere of extremely polarized politics in the US, which I'm sure you're all somewhat aware of, this very quickly can lead to escalation.
Sandra Pulaski warnt vor einer Polarisierung und Blockbildung wie etwa im Kalten Krieg.
It's very important to resist this breaking of the world into blocks, into opposing geopolitical blocks. You have to start from that underlying point if you want to be able to evaluate all of these different currents and bilateral arrangements and sectoral and material arrangements and so on, because that will determine what happens at that next order, at the geopolitical order. And when you think about a world in blocks, what happens when the world is divided into blocks is that the big powers, certainly the hegemon in the case of the US, but the great powers that are playing that great game, evaluate everything in terms of how it will weaken the adversary, how it will weaken the other bloc, how it will undermine the potential for growth of the other bloc, how it will spread discontent in the citizens of the other bloc. Both sides do that. And they do that to a profound degree such that it distorts, I would say warps, virtually every policy consideration that goes across borders. And some that don't, because it has a cancerous effect within each bloc as well.
So Sandra Pulaski. In einer Diskussion mit dem Publikum spricht Luciana Ciotto ein grundsätzliches Problem für Forscherinnen und Expertinnen an.
20 years ago, I remember that when I started being an activist on these topics, people used to say, and I remember this phrase, we have the same diagnosis on how things are working bad. What we don't have is an agreement between organizations on the alternatives. That was something that everybody said, no, we know how this works badly, but we don't agree on what should be done. I think that these past years, the problem is that we don't even agree on what's going on. So we don't even have a common diagnosis on what is going on. The changes are being so fast, and we're still, some of us, I will try to be out of that group, but what I see is that we still analyze the world with the neoliberal framework of the 90s. That is not necessarily correct for nowadays. This is a complete different situation. Everything is going really fast. This idea of maybe how the systemic works is the same, but the forms, the way that it is developing is different than the 90s. And we have this problem of diagnose. What the hell is going on? How do we approach this? What I bring to Latin American academia, and I want to bring here also, is the responsibility that we have as analysts, as people that work on these issues, to paint the whole picture.
Am Samstag, den 24. Juni, hat ein Panel zum folgenden Thema stattgefunden. The Pandemic, Geopolitics and the Climate Crisis. From Global Value Chains to Regional Resilient and Sustainable Production Networks. Einleitend sagt Moderatorin Alexandra Strickner von ATTAC.
And we will have more a look into the global value chains and what is happening there. COVID-19 has really exposed to many of us, in particular also in Europe, how vulnerable our economies are today as a consequence of the many years of neoliberal globalization, of offshoring, how, and also, of course, also in the global south, we could see that and we continue to see that, how this change of organizing the economy, including also the increasing global value chains and corporate structure, has made us very vulnerable. And at the same time, this was one of the start of shifts that we could observe with which have different roots. So there is a new era of industrial policies coming up. There is the whole climate crisis that is also contributing to that. And there is also the talk about deglobalization. Florence Papacuère, she's from the University of Montpellier, and she has conducted research on the rise of global value chains and their social and developmental implications over the last 15 years. She has done that particularly for the field of clothing and selected food chains.
Eingangs differenziert Florence Papacuère wie folgt in Bezug auf Wertschöpfungsketten.
And I would argue that, in fact, what we see as the development of regional value chains is more what I call ramifications of global value chains, an expansion of the same logic in like offsprings rather than a shift away from global value chains. The second important idea is the financial crisis marked the end of the very steep growth of global value chains. And we enter the phase of maturation. Doesn't mean that global trade is not growing anymore, but it's growing at a slower rhythm. So one way to understand this from the level of at which I look at things, which is the firm level, is that the reorganization of more national economies into global ones has achieved a threshold, a level of maturation. You know, whatever could be relocated has been relocated, if I put it bluntly. Now it's more like a stabilization of that model, and indeed regional value chains can be seen as a place where these global chains are searched to expand now in more regional networks.
Papacuère geht auf einen OECD-Report ein, der sich mit Afrika, Lateinamerika und Asien beschäftigt. Rund die Hälfte des asiatischen Außenhandels passiere mit den Ländern des globalen Nordens, die andere Hälfte regional in Asien.
What I find interesting is that we have key countries that developed as hubs in the global value chains, like South Africa in Africa, had historically developed very strong relation with the North, trading relation with the North, and it now develops its own regional value chains. Also as a way to have access lower cost production, but also to serve its own market. We see that also very clearly with China in Asia, which is also using the other countries to feed its own market and also as a backup for lower cost production. And I know the pattern in Latin America is a bit more diverse and complicated, but Mexico, who has been a major platform for the global value chain for the US, is also a platform for some regional chains.
Diese regionalen Wertschöpfungsketten wären als Verzweigungen von globalen Wertschöpfungsketten zu sehen, so Papacuère, die von Ergebnissen des OECD-Reports berichtet, die nicht auf einen Paradigmenwechsel im Handel hindeuten.
OECD says, but then the regional value chains could be more, offer more leverage for upgrading. So it's again the same rhetorics that you can develop and upgrade through value chains, but since the global ones have proven that they are not conducive to that, then the same discourse is sort of reframed for these regional value chains. But it's always the paradigm of economic trade and growth across countries. Paradigm is always, I would argue, the same.
Was braucht es für Florence Papacuère, um nachhaltige Wertschöpfungsketten zu ermöglichen?
So the final idea for me would be that if we want to think about truly more sustainable value chains, the direction to look into would be more to territorialized value chains than these regional value chains, which are the template of GVCs applied to regions. But the re-territorialization, what we have started to find with our civil society group partners, it can take actually two shapes. One is, of course, to embed production in the local communities, including between local communities, And here you have this broadening of the reflections in the civil society groups to go beyond my producer and consumer local thing, and how do I address food inequalities in the territory, food precarity, to provide decent food to also the deprived part of the population in the territory. So it's becoming more broader and political, and it also can develop between territories, also between also the north and the south, but that's for the small scale alternative value chains. And the groups that are targeted on fighting for better rights in the global value chains, they're very skeptical. Like, we're not ever going to relocate these massive industries. China is way too big for us to ever do it, in whatever industry we're looking at. So we need to fight for better rights. And this, in fact, is also a form of re-territorialization in two ways, either because it relies on the power of the state as a territory with the jurisdictional power of the law. And that's all the due diligence, I'm aware, it has been watered down through the negotiations, etc. But still, it's using the power of the state as a territory to enforce new rules on these big on the big guys, I would say. And that's about rebalancing power relations. That's a redistribution of power between actors in these global chains.
Sagt Florence Papacuer. Ein weiterer Speaker der Konferenz ist Andreas Bieler, Professor für politische Ökonomie an der Universität Nottingham. Er ist Co-Direktor des Center for the Study of Social and Global Justice und forscht zu Arbeit und Handel.
As I see it, we find ourselves at the moment in yet another crisis of overaccumulation in the global political economy. So that implies that there's an enormous amount of private cash sloshing around in the system, desperately searching for profitable investment opportunities. And I would argue that against the background of this crisis of overaccumulation, the economic crisis has spilled over into geopolitical confrontations. And of course, the war in Ukraine is one example in that respect, but I would argue also the tensions over Taiwan between the United States and China equally is one of the consequences of that. And so against this background of the crisis of overaccumulation, we have spilled over into geopolitical confrontations. So against this background of this geopolitical confrontation, I think we can identify a more regionally focused attempt to define new free trade policy regimes. So for example, the European Union talks a lot about an open strategic autonomy. So how can the European Union, in its external trade relations, how can it manifest its own position vis-à-vis China, vis-à-vis the United States? And as a result of that, for example, at the moment, reinforcing also those negotiations with Mercosur, yeah, in order to ensure this access to the essential raw materials.
Mathilde Dupré ist Expertin für internationale Entwicklung und Ökonomie. Sie war bereits für NGOs tätig bzw. hat für die EU Reformpläne in Bezug auf Handelspolitik entwickelt. Auch sie bezieht sich im folgenden Statement auf Mercosur. Der größte Handels- und Investitionspartner dieses Wirtschaftsraumes in Südamerika ist die EU.
The EU is pretending to have developed a green or sustainable trade policy for a long time now, but we can see that this is still not the case and the trade policy is maybe one of the least green policy of the EU. This is because trade agreements are still promoting trade and investment in all economic sectors, regardless the impact on the environment or the human rights. International transport is still also considered as a non-issue, and the trade agreements are restricting policy space for states to act and take concrete action against climate change. And one good example is the EU-Mercosur plan for a trade agreement. It's plans to encourage trade. We say sometimes it's a cause for care agreement, and it will encourage meat production and other agro-exportation from Mercosur countries, regardless the impact these production have on the environment. and car production, machine production in the EU without any ecological requirements. And also we know that it will also, not only on climate, but on other ecological aspects. For instance, it will promote the exports of EU forbidden pesticides, pesticides that are not used anymore in the EU, in those countries, and then we will import back agricultural products treated with these pesticides. So this is not at all sustainable trade.
Das war C3 Radio. Heute zur Konferenz The Future of Trade in a Polarized World, die vom 23. bis 25. Juni 2023 im C3-Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung in Wien stattgefunden hat. Weitere Informationen dazu findet man auf www.ofse.at bzw. man kann zum Thema auch in der C3-Bibliothek recherchieren. Und ein Veranstaltungstipp. Am 6. Oktober gibt es im C3 eine Veranstaltung zum langen Tag der Flucht. Beginn 11 Uhr. Siehe www.zentrum3.at. Auf dieser Website findet man auch Informationen zu allen Angeboten im C3. Folgen Sie bitte der ÖFSE und C3 Radio auch auf Facebook. C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat und ständig als Podcast auf Spotify. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Plank. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.